From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Cancel, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much. We have got a fine show for you today. Singer-songwriter Rufus Wainwright will join us later in the show to play Not My Job. It's very exciting. We're thrilled. But first, President Obama did an extraordinary thing this week, a week which saw more than its share of political crises and international stress. He left. Yep, he got on a plane and flew to the other side of the planet to start an Asian tour. Before he left, though, insiders said he sent a private message to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. It read, in the spirit of his trip, "Sayonara, suckers." He may have left. We're still here. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Grace from Tigard, Oregon.
Grace from Tigard, Oregon? I've never heard of Tigard, Oregon. Where is that?
It's the suburb of Portland.
It is. And what do you do there?
I'm the senior administrative assistant to the Department of Regulatory Affairs for a company called Biotronic.
That sounds like the sort of thing that a person who ends up involved in a deeply sinister conspiracy starts out at.
Oh, gosh, I hope not.
Grace, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, say hello to a comedian, director, and man about town, Mr. Paul Prevenza.
Hello, how are you?
Next, say hello to a deputy editor and blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor, right there.
Hello, Grace.
Hi.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and the author of the new Random House audio release, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 Years of Comments and Comic Pieces, Tom Baudette.
Hello, Grace.
Hi, Tom.
So, Grace, let's get this thing started. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle, of course, will recreate three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yes.
Your first quote is from Senator Joe Lieberman.
I don't feel like wiggling.
The senator was talking about just how inflexible he will be as what major bill goes to the Senate?
The health care plan?
Yes, health care, in fact. It was tough in the end to get a health care reform package through the House. Nancy Pelosi had to promise the Blue Dog Democrats things blue dogs like blue dog biscuits. A chance to ride around in her limo with her heads out the window. Belly rubs in the House floor. And Dennis Kucinich won an assurance that aura massage would be included in the coverage. But all that excitement from getting the bill passed in the House was dashed this week by the Senate. Lieberman, as you heard, promised he would not wiggle on his promise to filibuster the bill. In fact, it seems that the only way that Joe Lieberman will ever support health care is to create a way in which he can betray somebody by doing it.
You know, one of my first paid jobs as a kid, I talked to a friend's dad and let me help him move, and I was pretty much in the way the entire day. And at one point, and this has stuck with me my entire life, he said, "Son, you are a pimple on the butt of progress." And I thought of that in relation to Senator Lieberman this week. It seems like he has made it his job to be that boy I was.
Yeah. The problem is that Harry Reid, of course, now has to round up 60 votes to stop a filibuster of health care reform. He's making deals left and right. For example, in order to get Ben Nelson of Nebraska on board, Reid has agreed to have the federal government move the entire state of Nebraska to Florida for the winter. All right, let's move on. Here is your next quote.
It's just killing the left wing in this country that they can't force CNN to fire me.
That was somebody back on August 14th mocking those who wanted him gone. Then this week, he was gone. Who is it?
That was Lou Dobbs.
It was. Mr. Dobbs announced his sudden resignation from CNN on Wednesday. He said of his future, quote, I'm considering a number of options and directions. Industry Insider said the real reason was he wanted to spend more time with the family of his illegal alien gardener. We anticipate, though, because where else is he going to go? Because we anticipate him regretting the decision and trying to return to CNN. It'll be tough, though, as CNN is now building a fence around its borders just to keep people like him out. You know?
I think he just realized that he wasn't on Fox.
Really?
Yeah.
And he's like, what? Oh, wait a minute.
He said, I'm in the wrong network.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened.
Fox says that they haven't been talking to him. So.
Well, he's been auditioning for them for the last 2 years.
All right, here's your last quote. It was a question asked this week to the First Lady, Michelle Obama.
Are you part bird? You and I are both really tall.
That came from a tall bird. The question was asked to the First Lady as she was on hand to help celebrate the 40th anniversary this week of what show?
Sesame Street.
Exactly, Sesame Street. The show that delighted children for 40 years now is starting to show its age a bit. Cookie Monster is now on a regular regimen of Lipitor. Grover has become a prominent anti-tax activist, using his full name, Grover Norquist. And Oscar the Grouch, exactly the same, of course, but now he's in a nursing can.
Yeah, but the rest of the country's caught up with him because the rest of us are now living in garbage cans.
It's true. But here's the funny thing that people maybe didn't pay enough attention to. The anniversary points out, the 40th anniversary, that the people who are now basically running everything, people in their 40s, they grew up on Sesame Street. We grew up on Sesame Street. It's why, for example, President Obama has been known to say in meetings with the military, one division, two divisions,
And would it be in meetings on immigration where they went, one of these things is not like the
exactly.
other?
Exactly.
I see where you're going.
We are the Sesame Street generation. We didn't know what effects it would have until now.
You would think that at this point, Ernie and Bert could be in the military.
You'd think. After 40 years.
You would think.
Carl, how did Grace do in our quiz?
Grace, you had a perfect game. 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you, Grace. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, you may remember the Large Hadron Collider, history's largest scientific experiment. It was turned on last year only to fizzle out. After a year of repairs, it stalled again, and this time scientists say the malfunction was caused by what?
I didn't see this story, but my vast scientific background would lead me to believe it was an insect of
some
kind.
No, it was not. Well, apparently someone apparently mistook the 17-mile-long particle accelerator for a toaster.
Someone used it as a microwave. They put their Hot Pocket in it.
You're close.
Somebody dropped toast?
Well, not quite toast. I'll give it to you, though. It was a chunk of baguette that fell in. Last week, after facing a year-long rehabilitation, scientists at CERN switched on the massive collider, only to watch in horror as it immediately overheated. Much to their, quote, amusement, they dug around a bit and someone fished out a wedge of crusty French bread. In hindsight, they realized it was a mistake to open an Aubin Payne franchise in the middle of the accelerator.
I mean, could you imagine, if you're working at a place like that, probably one of the most high-tech installations in the entire world, that you'd, like, lean over a railing eating your lunch? I'm just like, oh, whoops.
Paul, to mark the 20th anniversary of the day the Berlin Wall fell, French President Nicolas Sarkozy posted a photo on Facebook of himself chipping away at the wall. Just one problem, though. What?
He wasn't there.
He was not there. Records show that Nicolas Sarkozy was in France that day and didn't get to Germany until a few days later. Explaining the mistake, Sarkozy says that he tried to get to Berlin, but he was stopped by the sign that said, "You must be this tall to tear down that wall." It was a little picture of a border guard, two-dimensional stand-up, holding his hand out there. Now, this incident has now cast doubt on some other Facebook photos he's posted in the last few months. The one of him stepping out of Apollo 11 onto the moon, captioned "One small step for one small man." And, of course, the picture of him standing holding aloft a Chicago Tribune with the headline, "Dewey defeats Sarkozy."
How about that one where he's standing next to that beautiful former supermodel, that woman, what in the heck's her name?
Carla Bruni, his actual wife? You don't believe that either?
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't know. You can do wonders with Photoshop. And what would she see in him, you know?
The top of his head, mostly.
Last night I saw up on the stair a little man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. Oh, how I wish he'd go away.
Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
It's Dick Clark from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Dick Clark, that's where you are.
Yep, where I am.
Where have you been?
Hiding in Salt Lake, apparently.
Apparently. It's nice to hear from you. Now, obviously, I'm assuming you're not the Dick Clark. You're a different Dick Clark.
This is true.
Has this been a problem for you in your life?
Ever since 8th grade, yep.
Yeah. Have you ever thought of yourself as introducing yourself with, like, by Richard or Rich or just using a different
name? I've tried, but you know how 8th grade boys are.
I do.
Going back to it. So.
I do. Well, welcome to the show, Dick. Now, you're going to play the game in which you must tell truth from fiction. What's the topic, Carl?
Pledge today, and in addition to this nice mug, I'll come to your house and weep with gratitude.
In these trying times, other organizations out there are trying to catch up with us in public broadcasting, in the fine art of begging. Well, this week we read about one fundraising idea that generated a lot of interest. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about new efforts to generate cash. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I'm ready as I ever will be.
All right. First, let's hear from Tom.
The meager donations gathered year after year from her well-heeled community made Westchester County, New York Hospital Development Chair Rita Ramirez sick to her stomach. So she decided to turn the tables and rake in the cash at their annual black tie fundraiser gala. To add punch to her bluntly worded keynote speech, "Even the rich get sick," she arranged to have Ipecac put into the food of one of the dinner guests. Ms. Ramirez lectured, "You may feel immune to tragedy, but someone very close to you will become ill sooner or later." It was sooner. As if on cue, the unlucky attendee revealed for the room her entree choice of salmon, which prompted a man at the next table to disclose his beef, and all the way through the impeccably dressed room right down to the shrimp cocktails and martini olives. Luckily, there were several dozen doctors and nurses in attendance to administer to the stricken. Chief of Surgery Dr. Karen Arthur remarked, "It looked like a food fight at Eileen Fisher's." Dr. David Pelea, co-host of the event, said Ms. Ramirez is cleaning up on her way out the door.
A hospital fundraiser going perhaps a little bit too far in trying to encourage her donors to give. Your next story of a new way of generating cash comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Call it Cash for Clunker Kids. It sounds like every test-taking student's dream. Pay money, get better grades. That's exactly what Rosewood Middle School in North Carolina offered. A $20 donation would get you 10 points each on two tests of your choice. Turn that 60 in algebra into an almost respectable 70 with the wave of a sawbuck. Hey, schools need money. Last year's chocolate sale flopped. And hand sanitizer is expensive. Principal Susie Shepherd said 20 points wouldn't make much difference anyway. Sadly, Rosewood kids are back to hitting the books instead of hitting up their parents because the school canceled the grade sale Thursday under a hail of irate parents and manufactured media outrage. Would you like to buy a tin of caramel popcorn?
bribing the school, I'm sorry, contributing to the school for improved grades on tests. Your last story of an unlikely fundraising pitch comes from Paul Prevenza.
With arts funding cutbacks and long-term benefactors hit by hard times, the Marshall Cordell Theater Company in Edinburgh, Scotland, has come up with an innovative way to raise some money. Nobody knows or cares who Yorick is, says founder Marshall Cordell, so we can use any name we want. It makes no difference to the play. For a 500-pound donation, they'll change his name to anything you choose. One audience was treated to hearing Hamlet say, "Alas, poor David Singer, attorney at law, I knew him well." Another gentleman was memorialized when the cast waited for Morty instead of Godot. "Someone gave us a hefty donation to take it even further," said Cordell, "and we changed the name of a major character in West Side Story. But we soon realized there is a limit to this. It just didn't work to hear, 'Aunt Mildred, Aunt Mildred, I just met a girl named Aunt Mildred.'"
All right, Dick, let's review the choices. From Tom Baudet, how an eager fundraiser for a hospital decided to make one of her donors sick just to prove her point. From Kira O'Connor, how a school offered better grades than a test in return for donations. Or from Paul Prevenza, how a theater company in Scotland will put your name in classic texts for a contribution to the theater company. Which of these is the real story of an innovative fundraising idea?
Well, as much as I want it to be Paul's story, because that's fantastic, I think it's probably Kiri's.
So you have chosen Kiri's story of the school that tried to raise money by offering improved grades on a test. Well, we spoke to somebody who knew about this plan.
Well, basically, the school had started a fundraiser that would allow students to receive extra grade credit as an incentive for collecting donations for the school.
There you are. You were correct. That was Ken Dirksen, Public Information Officer for Wayne County Public Schools in Michigan. Congratulations, Dick. You got it right. That was, in fact, the true story. You've earned a point for Kiri O'Connor, and you've won our prize. Carol Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for playing, Dick. Great to have you. We'll be able to say Dick Clark was on our show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And now the game where we ask people who have been good at one thing their whole lives to finally try something else. Rufus Wainwright has been called the greatest songwriter on the planet, and he was called that by Elton John, who knows a little something about songwriting himself. Rufus's new live CD and DVD is called Milwaukee At Last. It's in stores now. We're very excited to have him here. Rufus Wainwright, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Now, Rufus, I've been a fan of yours since your first record came out, like, I guess it was like 1999, 98, 99. And you seemed ridiculously young then, but it turns out you had actually started your performing career at an even younger age, 12, 14?
Yeah, no, the first gig I had was in a Canadian movie called Tommy Tricker and the Stamp Collector. And I was a rock star in a mall, kind of a gay child. Tiffany.
There you are.
I've been doing this for more than 20 years now. I still look young.
That's important. It's all important how you look. Let's go back into your background. You, of course, are famously from a musical family. Your father, Loudon Wainwright III, your mother, Kate McGarrigle, your aunt, Anna McGarrigle. Was it inevitable that you become a musician? Did you ever want to rebel and become an actuary or something?
I wanted to be a fireman only because, I don't know, I'd have a chance getting a date or something. But I was pretty entranced by music at a young age, and it worked for me.
But you were different in style, I think we can say. Your father, the traditional singer songwriter, confessional guitar player, standing there. Your mother, of course, were famous for their thing. But you've always had a much more operatic style.
Definitely. My getting into opera was a type of rebellion, against the banjo mania that inhabited my genetic back, you know, entourage. But yeah, so I rebelled with, you know, fat lady singing.
Really?
Yeah, no, it was a good way to get away from the yodeling. Yeah,
I understand.
Oh, please. Yodeling.
You, and the song that you sang in that movie, I actually watched it on YouTube. You wrote it.
Yeah, I wrote it.
So you wrote and performed a song that was nominated for a major award at the age of 12, 14?
Yeah, well, I was about 13, yeah.
My gosh, I can't imagine what a song that I might have come up with at the age of 12.
Well, the music business is pretty tough, and my mom realized that I was going to be in it at a young age, so, you know, she got me started fast because, you know, she wanted to retire on something. Basically.
I understand. Get him going. So you've done so much. You've done, you're obviously, your many records and your concerts, and now you've written an opera. What left is there for you to conquer? What other worlds
are
there?
Well, now I've pared it down a bit for my next project, which is going to be just a solo piano voice record, just me at the piano. And I'm in the studio, actually, at this moment recording it. So
right.
It's the sort of sorbet in the meal, in the 10-course meal that is my career. So
yeah.
It's a chance to kind of wipe off your mouth and get ready for the next, you know.
Is it tough for you not to, for what I imagine is the first time, be lush? Because your music has always been so lush and all kinds of things happening and, you know,
well, unfortunately, that would be the case if I was playing the guitar or, you know, the ukulele or something. But the piano is a pretty, you know, there's some pretty lush piano music out there. So I've managed to, flower it up enough.
You seem like a pretty large personality to me, having followed you and listened to your music and read about. I mean, there's a story, for example, that you commissioned a pair of custom-made lederhosen to perform in.
Yes.
Let me pause to ask why.
Well, basically, lederhosen, the thing that's great about lederhosen is that, you know, you look 20 years younger where you wear them. So now...
Wait a minute. So you're saying that lederhosen are sort of your Botox? Is that what you're telling me?
Kind of, basically. My deer-skinned Botox. And, so they make you look young. And also, you know, I've got the butt for it.
Yeah, well, there you are.
That's what all of those sort of nationalistic costumes are. They're basically old-fashioned Botox to make you look old.
Yes. And you... Where did you get the lederhosen, Rufus Wainwright?
I had it made in Austria.
Of course you did.
In a town called Salenzee, which is actually the same town where the Von Trapp family was from originally. So I presumably have the same lederhosen that the Von Trapp family had.
Perhaps the lonely goatherd himself wore this brand of lederhosen. I keep coming back to this only because I have children myself, and I'm so amazed at your precocity. When you were a kid, did you do what kids do and put on shows for your family?
Well, speaking of you mentioned Godot earlier.
Yeah.
One of the stories of my childhood is that I, of course, like all children, wanted to be in a play at all times.
Yes.
And perform. And I would nag my mother constantly, Mom, I want to be in a play, I want to be in a play, I want to be in a play, let's do a play. And finally one day she turned to me and she said, okay, we're going to do a play now. It's called Waiting for Godot. Now you're Godot. Go into the other room. And I would turn around and be like, am I on yet? No.
No, no.
No, not yet.
No. Well, Rufus Wainwright, we are so delighted to talk to you. We've asked you here to play a game that we're calling...
They had style, they had rhythm, they had perfect teeth.
Now, you come from a musical family, as we've discussed, but did you ever get a Saturday morning cartoon based on your adventures? I think not. The Osmonds did, so we're going to ask you three questions about the Osmond family.
Okay.
I'm sure... deep rivals of the McGarrigle.
Yeah, I don't know what they would have done with a little gay lederhosen.
I don't know.
Wearing opera queen.
No, let me tell you, they would have rocked the lederhosen, okay? They were good-looking people.
That was the album that was never released.
All right. We're going to ask you three questions about the Osmonds. Get two right, you'll win our prize from one of our listeners, Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes.
All right. Carl, who is Rufus Wainwright playing for?
Rufus is playing for Monty Messix of Los Angeles, California.
Here's your first question, Rufus. The Osmonds' first album in 1963 was called, simply and truthfully, Songs We Sang on the Andy Williams Show. That's okay. What it was. Then in 1964, they decided they wanted to put out a new album with a new sound. What was that album called? A, Psycha Osmond Delia. B, The Osmonds After Dark. Or C, The New Sound of the Osmond Brothers Singing More Songs They Sang on the Andy Williams Show.
Oh, God. You know, they can be pretty quirky, those folks, and I'm gonna go with the psychedelic one.
You're gonna go
with
the Psycha Osmond Delia?
Yeah, I think they could have actually done that because they're fun.
They are fun, but they're not imaginative. It was called The New Sound of the Osmond Brothers Singing More Songs They Sang on the Andy Williams Show.
Oh my God. Okay.
Well, they did sing a lot of songs on the Andy Williams Show. You know?
It was a literal time, Rufus. What can I tell you? All right. You still have two more chances. We're going to do good here. Now, Donny Osmond, as you know, has had a pretty good career, given that he's an ex-child star, but he's had some rough moments. What might have been the lowest point of his post-Osmond Brothers, Donny and Marie career? Was it A staged boxing match between Osmond and fellow ex-child musician Donny Bonaducci from the Partridge Family. B, a stint doing advertising for Fixident, the dental adhesive, with the tagline, "Shh, it's my secret." Or C, playing himself at the age of 10 in a Brantford, Missouri musical play, The Story of the Osmonds.
Oh, my God. I would go with B, only because that would be my idea of hell.
So you think that Donny Osmond would come out and admit that he had dentures?
Is that what that is?
Yeah, fix it in.
You're giving me a second chance here. Yeah, let's go with A.
You're going to go with A stage boxing match? You're right.
Yeah.
Very
okay.
good. The boxing match took place in Chicago in 1994, and Danny Bonaducci won.
Wow.
All right, this is great. You have one more chance. Get this, you get it all. Here we go. Last question. Donny Osmond always suffered from his white bread image, and he says that at one time his manager came up with an elaborate and very serious plan to improve his street rep. What was it? A, he and Eartha Kitt would appear to be an item. B, he'd fly to India to study with the Beatles' old Maharishi. Or C, he'd be busted for carrying drugs at an airport.
Well, we know it's not C.
Remember, this was a plan. They were going to, you know, fake this.
Oh, they were going to fake it.
Yeah.
Okay, then it is C.
You're right, it is C. He was talking about his 20s, which was after Donny and Marie, and he's talked about how awful it was, and he says, quote, "My publicist at the time put together a whole plan to get me busted at an airport."
Really?
Where in customs they'd find drugs in my bag.
They had the whole... I am so naive.
Really? Yes.
I thought you really had to get busted for drugs. That's why I did it.
Really? You did it for your career. It's worked out, you know. Carl, how did Rufus Wainwright do in our quiz?
Rufus had 2 correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Monty Messix.
How wonderful, Rufus. There you go. Rufus Wainwright's live CD and DVD is called Milwaukee At Last. It's out now. His opera, Prima Donna, premiered at the Manchester International Festival in July. It opens in London in April, and he is one of my very favorite musicians. Rufus Wainwright, thank you so much for joining us on WaitWait.com.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
California, California, you're such a wonder that I think I'll stay in bed. Big time rollers, part time models, so much to plunder that I think I'll sleep instead. I know this.
Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl takes a bite out of rhyme in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, though, some more questions for you from the week's news. Kiri, listen to this very pious man.
We help companies to grow. Companies that grow create wealth. This, in turn, allows people to have jobs that create more growth and more wealth. We have a social purpose. We are doing God's work.
That was a man named Lloyd Blankfein who was doing God's work by running what company?
Goldman Sachs?
Yes, Goldman Sachs. Britain's Telegraph newspaper spent some quality time at the richest, most successful bank in the world, and it turns out, big surprise, the billionaire bankers have no sense of proportion or shame. Meanwhile, from heaven, God issued a statement saying that he agreed with Mr. Blankfein and said that whole thing about it being easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get to heaven was an editing error. And the passage in the New Testament should have read, if you have to ask how much it costs to get to heaven, you can't afford it.
Yeah, I guess you could argue that even, you know, tapeworms are God's creatures and doing God's work.
Tapeworms, bankers.
Yeah, but
if Goldman Sachs is doing God's work, what kind of bonus do you think God got this year? Must have been massive.
I wish he'd share it with us.
Yeah. Well, he was upset, of course. These guys are walking around saying, I have more money than God. And he's like, how'd that happen? Paul, in these tough times, many local governments in Britain have set up oversight boards, called over their scrutiny panels, to make sure money is being spent wisely. The town council of Wealden, England, has gone one step further, though. They've set up a scrutiny panel to scrutinize what?
The scrutiny panel.
Exactly right. Sure. Sure. The scrutiny panels scrutinize the other parts of government, but who scrutinizes the scrutinizers? A scrutiny scrutinizer. That's who. The scrutiny panel is supposed to, quote, review and improve services and to achieve better value for the money. But how can you be sure? There's nobody scrutinizing the scrutiny scrutinizers. We need a scrutiny panel, which will in turn be scrutinized by the scrutiny panel, and so on, until everybody in Britain is lined up in one long, undulating conga line of people joined at the ends, scrutinizing the person in front of them. It's a scrutinanny.
Well, that'll take care of the unemployment issue.
Exactly.
Well, we could sure use those in this country, because here we don't get scrutiny panels. We just get screwed.
Screwed. A scrutinanny does sound dirty, doesn't it?
It does sound dirty.
I don't think it's that much fun. Tom, the New York Times reported this week that scientists are doing research on the intelligence of pigs. And one of the things they have discovered is that pigs can do what?
They can understand derivatives.
I'm glad someone
more than I can.
Well, they're very smart. Pigs are very smart. They can. Jeez, you know, without the opposable thumbs, they're limited what they can do. It must be a thinking game, I'm thinking. Can I have a hint?
Well, they showed an affinity for Grand Theft Truffle.
Oh, they can play video games.
They can. Pigs can play video games. Now, so remember, before you say something insulting to that schlubby guy hogging the NBA Jam game at Chuck E. Cheese's, beware, his front hooves can be quite sharp. Now, this research was mentioned in the Times this week, but it was actually done back in 97. Researchers created a joystick that pigs could manipulate with their snouts. They played basic games like...
Boy, you don't want the game after them.
No. You can keep it. They played basic games like the one in which they tried to match shapes or the original Gears of War. Now, not much publicized research has been done since then on pigs on video games. But if one of your World of Warcraft guildmates says she's got to go suckle her 12 young, don't crack wise about bacon, okay? Paul, in order to give their students an exercise in problem solving, teachers at an elementary school in Britain created what while the kids were away on vacation? So the kids came back to the school and they found what?
Natural disaster?
No. I'll give you a hint. Think CSI... homeroom.
Oh, a crime scene?
A crime scene.
Oh, okay.
So 300 students at Fox Hill Primary School in Sheffield come back from vacation. They encounter police tape all over their school, blood smeared in the hallways, and a teacher walking around with a bandaged head. And they're told that somebody has broken in and attacked the teachers. Who could it have been? And the place is swarming with crime scene investigators, and they take fingerprints, and they ask the students, some as young as 5, to help catch the culprit by searching for evidence. Some kids were traumatized by this. This is Britain, after all.
Where is the board of scrutiny?
Yeah, I know. That, yeah. So some of the kids, they couldn't deal with this. This is Britain, after all. Their children are not armed, as ours are. And Angry parents claimed the students weren't aware the exercise was fake until the notice was sent out at the end of the week. The small children were not able to capture the culprit, but they were able to determine that the crime occurred while the little hand was near the five. They did come up with a list of suspects, of course. The Big Bad Wolf, Colonel Mustard, Lord Voldemort, and Joe Lieberman. Somehow that name came up.
Even in England.
They've heard of him. They're scared of him. They say to kids when they're going to bed in England, oh, you now go to sleep or Joe Lieberman will come and endorse your opponent. Frightened figure of terror to them. Terror, I tell you. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link at npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show on April 15th in St. Louis. Tickets are going fast. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Michelle from Glenpool, Oklahoma.
Hey, Michelle, how are you?
Doing all right. I just celebrated my 21st birthday yesterday.
Oh, congratulations and happy birthday.
Thank you.
I got to ask. It's a big birthday. What'd you do to celebrate?
Well, you know, I listen to NPR, so I didn't exactly go out on the town.
Oh, really? Did you? Yeah.
She put reinforcements in her notebook.
Yeah. Well, Michelle, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks. Oh, God, youth is wasted on NPR listeners. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, on two of the limericks will be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
At 3 days, little babies supply a big clue where their origins lie. Is it il wah, or le, or das wah, or the? There's an accent in every kid's
cry.
Right. Everybody knows babies look like their parents. It turns out they sound like them, too. According to a study in the journal Current Biology, babies cry in different accents. The babies hear their parents talking while in the womb, and so when they cry, they use the same inflections. French newborns, for instance, cry with a rising accent. That's very attractive to the nurses. It's not something like, wah. German babies cry with an umlaut. The lead researcher got the idea for the study while visiting friends in New York, and their baby said its first words, wah, you got a problem? Wah, wah. Hey, I'm crying here. Wah.
Hey, change this.
Here's your next limerick.
So the 7, I think, was the year when the Hindenburg flew in good cheer. The pilot and crew brought Oktoberfest brew. The ship burned, but we still have the
beer.
Yes, beer. Over 70 years ago, firefighters dug an intact bottle of Löwenbräu beer out of the wreckage of the doomed Hindenburg airship. And it goes up for auction in Germany this weekend. Oh, the drinkability. The bottle is expected to go for more than $8,000. It'll make it the most expensive bottle of beer ever sold. Be warned, according to the auctioneer, quote, you wouldn't want to drink it. It's probably quite putrid to taste. To that, millions of old Milwaukee drinkers say, hey, we've had worse. All right, here's your last limerick, Michelle.
I am cursed with two knees that are knobby. And three names, they're Joe, Ricky, Bobby. When I'm dating online, I should sound more divine. I'll say whitewater rafting's my
hobby.
Right. Don't worry about improving your looks or your personality. Just start lying about your hobbies to get a date. According to a British survey, certain hobbies make people more attractive to the opposite sex. Men, ixnay on the World of Warcraft, A. Instead, say you play football, surf, and or go rock climbing. Women, find a way to casually mention to that hot guy that you like to do yoga, cook. Oh, and that's right, here in the list, pole dance. For some reason, men find that attractive. Scientists are baffled. by why dancing in a Polish fashion would appeal to men. Carl, how did Michelle do in our quiz?
Michelle had 3 correct answers, Peter, so she wins our prize.
Well done, Michelle, and happy Yay. Birthday. Congratulations. Thanks so much for playing.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Kerry O'Connor and Paul Provenza each has 3 points. Tom Beaudet has 2.
Okay. So, Tom, you are in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin. Your first question, fill in that blank. In October, the blank rate reached 10%.
Unemployment.
Right. President Obama and the First Lady visited Arlington National Cemetery on Wednesday to commemorate blank.
Veterans Day.
Right. The American Medical Association voted to oppose the military's blank policy.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right. On Monday, Kraft's hostile takeover bid was rejected by British chocolate maker blank.
Cadbury.
Right. A man escaped from a jail in Georgia after unlocking the door of his cell with a blank.
A hair from his beard.
No, a flip-flop. While wearing an old-style suit at a swim meet in Sweden, blank failed 3 times to qualify for the finals.
Phelps.
Yeah, Michael Phelps. The Vatican hosted a 5-day conference to explore the possibility of the existence of blank.
This is the Vatican.
The Vatican.
The existence... Immaculate Conception.
No, of extraterrestrial life. A survey of shoppers at a British department store found that men only buy their own blank for a total of 17 years in their lives.
Underwear.
Exactly right. Respondents at the Debenhams department store admitted that they only bought their own underwear between the ages of around 19 to about 36 during that brief period of independence after they left their mothers and before they've surrendered decision-making to the new woman in their lives. Or maybe they've just given up and let their mother do it more. This means the age a man decides to get married is not dependent on job security or income, but rather the moment his last pair of underwear finally turns to dust. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
All right. We flipped a coin. Paul has elected to go second. Here you go, Paul. Fill in the blank. President Obama spoke at a memorial service for the 13 people killed during the shootings last week at blank.
Fort Hood.
Right. In advance of her interview next week, Oprah Winfrey released video of blank discussing tensions in the McCain campaign.
Sarah Palin.
Right. A Swiss diplomat was allowed to meet with 3 American hikers being detained on espionage charges in blank.
Iraq.
No.
Iran.
No. Sorry, you said Iraq first. Concerned sorry. About the 2016 Olympics. Were raised after a massive blackout hit half of blank for hours.
Brazil.
Right. A South Korean woman is celebrating finally passing the written exam for her driver's license after blanking.
Failing 100 times.
Actually, failing 950 times. Okay. A plea agreement was reached with Lisa Nowak, the blank accused of attacking a romantic rival.
Astronaut.
Right. Google announced Tuesday that it would be providing free blank at 47 airports over the holidays.
Wi-Fi.
Right. A nearly $1 million effort to attract English-speaking visitors to Latvia was canceled when tourism officials discovered all their new posters and leaflets did not say easy to go, hard to leave, but instead said blank.
Easy to leave, hard to go.
No, it said easy to go, hard to live. The city of Riga in Latvia is now known primarily as a destination city for having wild bachelor parties. This is true. You fly in for cheap and get drunk all you want. They hope to change their reputation with a new slogan, and with the flyers promoting Riga as easy to go, hard to live, they probably succeeded. All right, Carl, how did Paul do in our quiz?
Paul had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, but Tom still has the lead with 14.
All right, so how many then?
Oh, I know the answer to this.
How many then does Kerry need to do it?
6 correct answers.
All right. Ready to go, Kerry?
I'm ready.
Here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. President Obama rejected the options presented to him and asked for revisions to plans for the war in blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. Tensions were high between North and South blank after a naval clash this week.
Korea.
Right. To escape a felony conviction, the parents of blank pled guilty to perpetuating a hoax.
The balloon boy.
Right. The U.S. Marshal Service is planning to auction off property seized from Ponzi schemer blank.
Bernie Madoff.
Right. A man who was scheduled to appear on the Jerry Springer Show had his appearance canceled because he jumped the gun and blanked.
I'm put on a diaper.
No, started a fight with his rival in the hotel before the show had taped. After rumors circulated that he was dropping out, Steven Tyler said that he was just taking time off from blank.
Aerosmith.
Right after pictures showed his skin several shades lighter than usual, blank explained it was because of his new skin cream.
Sammy Sosa.
Right, a British man on the run surprised police when he blanked after his mugshot appeared in the paper.
When he surrendered.
No, when he sent the police a more flattering photo. There's nothing worse than having a bad picture of yourself in the paper, so when Matthew Maynard saw his terrible mugshot right there on the page, he immediately sent in a much better photo of himself posed in front of a police van. Police said they were happy to oblige him and use the new photo because, quote, everyone in Swansea will know what he looks like now. Maynard was arrested a short time later. Carl, did Kiri do well enough to win?
She needed six correct answers, and she had six
well
correct
done.
Answers. So with 15 points, Kiri O'Connor is this week's champion.
Well done. Congratulations, Kiri. And for you, a custom-made pair of lederhosen.
Thank you so much.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what Lou Dobbs will do next now that he's left CNN. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist on newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Medicare. Open enrollment ends December 31st. More at medicare.gov or 1-800-MEDICARE. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Ashley Rayfeld. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. DJ Litterman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Shillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what is next for Lou Dobbs? Paul Prevenza.
Lou Dobbs is going to be running for president of Mexico.
I love you when you're here will be his slogan. Kiri O'Connor.
Oh, he's going to follow a lifelong dream of recording an album of Tejano music.
And Tom Baudet.
He's going to sell invisible border fencing on QVC with the tagline, "Put the collar on those illegals with Lou Dobbs."
And if Lou Dobbs does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Kiri O'Connor, Tom Baudet, and Paul Prevenza. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.